Okay, hope you can hear me, and we are now going to discuss Pena Pindupama Sutta, and that is what we were discussing for a couple of weeks now. And at one occasion, Buddha was staying at Ayodhyans and closer to the Ganges River, and there he found various similes to explain about five khandhas. And we already discussed the form aggregate, the Rupakhanda, and that is where Buddha mentioned the form aggregate is very much like a form, that is F-O-A-M, what you call as a glob of form. So as you know, when the river generates some amount of waves, it may go and hit the river bank, and as a result, there are constantly form being generated. But look from the far, you can't recognize them as the form. Rather, you might even see them as some thick, like a white color stone. But when you come closer and inspect, you may recognize it is a kind of an empty form. So similarly, Buddha mentioned this body is empty, and there is nothing substantial, and there is nothing worthy of attaching. So likewise, he make use of this strong simile to explain us this insubstantial nature of this body, empty nature of this body, and there is no essence in this body. So that is what we discuss under the first simile Buddha given in this sutta, Pena Pindupama Sutta. And then during the last week, we discussed the next topic, that is related to the feelings. You know, there are various kinds of feelings, pleasurable feelings, neutral feelings, painful feelings. And if you are able to make or generate fair amount of concentration, you can again and again apply your concentrated mind to these various feelings. As a result, you are able to recognize various feelings. Now, when you are able to recognize various feelings, so you may start to understand, okay, there are various kinds of feelings, but when pleasurable feelings are there, there are no painful feelings at that same position, at the same place. And there are no neutral feelings. And when the pleasurable feelings disappear, there may be painful feelings, there may be neutral feelings. When the painful feeling disappears, again there are neutral feelings or the pleasurable feelings. So likewise, they constantly change from pleasurable to pain to say neutral, neutral to pain, again pain to neutral, neutral to pleasurable. So likewise, they are constantly changing. And as you observe this process, you may understand you have almost no control. So they occur due to various causes, and those causes are also very impermanent, inconstant. As a result, their generated feelings are also inconstant. They are also impermanent, and all are beyond our control. And again, as we pay close attention, probably we can understand it is not a single feeling, but an accumulation of series of feelings or minute feelings that resultant we call as a feeling, but actually there are many minute feelings. So likewise, we are able to understand the nature of the feelings, and Buddha says these feelings are like bubbles, water bubbles. When a raindrop comes and hit the water surface, there's a water bubble generates. And then instantly it bursts. And again, a raindrop hits the water surface. It generates a water bubble. And immediately it bursts. So likewise, Buddha mentioned these all various kinds of feelings are quite inconstant, impermanent, and constantly subject to change. And each minute feeling, if you are able to precisely observe, you may understand they are behaving very much similar to this simile. like heavy rain happens, at that time the water surface, if you observe constantly, there are water bubbles generated and burst. Similarly, if you are paying close attention to certain feelings, you may understand they also have the nature to arise and have the nature to quickly burst, quickly pass away. So this is the second simile Buddha gives to the second aggregate, that is the feeling. Now we can discuss today the third part. So that is the perception. Sometimes we actually translate it as perception, but here actually sanya. Sanya literally means signs. So we all have collections of various signs, and those signs are fairly stored in our mind. So whenever we see something, we immediately recognize because of those stored signs in our mind. So when at the very beginning, when we went to kindergarten, to our nursery or our first grade, so there are, our teachers may introduce various colors to us, so showing various objects. Okay, she or he may introduce, okay, this is red color, this is blue color, this is white color. So likewise, our teachers introduce while we are kids. So at that time, we store that information. Okay, this is called red color, this is called white color, this is called blue color, this is called green color. So likewise, we are sort of storing various signs, storing certain marks in our mind, maybe in our brain. Similarly, they introduce, okay, this is a rectangular shape, this is a triangular shape, this is a circular shape. So we recognize various shapes. And again, they introduce, okay, this is a cat, this is a dog, this is an elephant, this is a bird, this is a man, this is a woman. So various objects they introduce. And different, say, different foods they introduce. This is rice, this is beet, this is, say, cabbage. Likewise, different foods they introduce, different vegetables, different fruits. So they are constantly helping us to store all this information. Nowadays, actually, it's an information technology. And once you log on to internet, once you browse the internet, so much information is available. And you can store so much information in our mind, in our brain. So fairly, therefore, we are in the information age. So much information, perceptions, signs are already stored. And there are very much, signs related to various forms, various sights. Say, for example, you know to distinguish between a rectangle and a triangle, between a triangle and a circle. So there are differences. So those are certain signs, marks that you already have. Similarly, when we consider various sounds, say you can recognize when a dog barks, when a, say, cat makes a sound, so you can distinguish between these two. And when a, say, woman sings, and when a man sings, you can have a difference. You can recognize this is the particular singer. So likewise, there are certain characteristics in the sounds. Using those characteristics, you can recognize, you can distinguish. And similarly, there are various smells. Say, when you recognize a rose flower, it may have a different fragrance, and maybe a lotus flower, it has a different fragrance. So likewise, fragrance are also different. They have different marks, certain signs, using which actually we can recognize. Similarly, various states, say if you feel bitter, if you feel, say, tasty, salty, so likewise different tastes are there. So you can immediately recognize which taste is this. Similarly, when something is touched in your body, so you can recognize, okay, this is the hot, this is cold, this is vibration, this is pressure. So likewise, various sensations, there are differences, and using which you can recognize there are differences. And even the mind, so when different, mind objects happen to the mind, occur to the mind, you can recognize. Say when lust occur in the mind, you can recognize. When anger occur in the mind, you can recognize. So there are distinct differences between these, among these mental objects. So likewise, you can see this signs are quite broader, broader aspect. And there are various signs, marks in the field of the sights, various marks in the field of sounds, various marks in the field of tastes, smells, tactile sensations, and the mental objects. Now, we constantly storing these things, and some part also actually forgetting, but certain parts we remembering, we are memorizing. Now, as a result, actually this even further developed to various, letters, marks, signs, say road signs, and various other different signs, and words, sentences, and essays, short stories, long stories, novels, languages. So all are actually now broadening, and we are speaking, we are talking using various languages. So this is the manifestation of the signs. So this is how it is broadening. So now we can't even recognize they as signs. So we are now thinking using these various languages. We are talking using these various languages. We are communicating using these languages. We are writing using these languages. And they have become part and parcel of our life. Now we can't distinguish. We can't remember that they are simple tools just to facilitate the communication between people, among people, among nations. So they actually man-made. They are actually man-made, but we forget they are simple convenience to the communication, and they are merely conventions. But ultimately what happens, we got trapped in these various signs. We got trapped in these various marks. Suppose now we are representing a Buddha using a Buddha statue. And if someone harms that Buddha statue, we get hurt. Suppose we represent Christ using some other way, using another mark. If someone damage that statue, so people may get hurt. And people may get into quarrel, get into wars even. And all these are signs, but we forget. And so all these quarrels actually has root to all different very, primary kind of signs. Similarly, all the proliferation, all rumination have these primary kinds of signs. So there's a very beautiful verse in the Sutta Nipata. So I am trying to show it here. So there Buddha mentioned, na sanya sanyi, na visanya sanyi, nopi asanyi, na vibhuta sanyi, evang sametasya vibhuti rupang, sanya nidanahi papancha sankha. Now, if we pay attention to this sanya nidanahi papancha sankha, so this is one very important statement by the Buddha. So Buddha mentioned, so for all the various kinds of papancha, various kinds of proliferation, various kinds of rumination. So if you are able to go back, there you will find signs as their root. From a little sign, they start. From a little sign, we start to think. So once there is a kind of a eye contact happens, assume that you are sort of seeing some form. So at that time, the eye and the form is there, and then as a result, the eye consciousness arises. And we recognize all these three as the contact, all these things, all these three happen together. That is how we perceive. And then the contact happens. And when contact happens, there's a feeling. So there's assume that's a pleasurable feeling. So we, as a result, we recognize, okay, this is so and so. So we give a name to that sight, whatever we have seen. So we give a name, we give a label. And we now start to have a little thought. So once we have given a label, once we have given a name, now we generate a thought, vitakka. And we don't stop there. And we generate another thought. We generate another thought. We generate another thought. So likewise, now we are weaving a net of thoughts. Now we are weaving net of thoughts. So now it's a generation of thoughts. And more it starts to build or grow in many different directions. In one direction we are thinking, another direction we are thinking, another direction we are thinking. So ultimately, we can't stop thinking. Actually, we are the ones started thinking, but later there's a stage, we can't stop thinking. Mind continuously start to think, mind start to proliferate, and we can't even volitionally stop it, deliberately stop it, because now mind has got the momentum to think. It has become a sort of a vicious cycle. Now we are in an obsession, obsessive thinking. Now we are like victims of this obsession, victim of this obsessive thinking. So actually at the beginning, it happens like a cause and effect relationship. When the eye meets the form, then the eye consciousness happen. It's a cause and effect relationship. And then altogether we perceive like a contact. And as a result, the feeling, suppose it's a pleasurable feeling, as a result, we are recognizing there's a sign, there's a mark. And now, onto which we start to think. We are now putting a thought. Again, we make a thought. Again, we make a thought. Now, we volitionally do that. Previous part is because of the cause and effect relationship. Now, we deliberately start to think. Now, still in our control. We are the ones thinking. But later, as we are promoting this thinking, then it is growing. It is growing in many different directions. And now it becomes a huge obsession. And now you can't stop. Now it is a huge proliferation going on and on. Now you are a victim. You are no more the master. You are a victim. You are a slave of the thinking. So to all these proliferation, Buddha says here, Sanya nidanahi papancha sankha. To all these papancha, all these proliferation, sanya, the signs have as the root. Sign is the root. So recognizing these signs is one of the very important aspect of the Buddha's teaching. Actually, you can't do it successfully while you are in the Kayanupassana, nor in the Vedananupassana, but maybe in the Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, you have the chance to recognize various signs. And once you are moving further, so you can even recognize you are making certain, the perversions. Because when we are seeing something, we get the perception that it is there, it is existing, it is permanent. And it is beautiful. It may give us satisfaction. It may give us happiness. So this is how we perceive. So the sign itself is making us kind of deluded. And so we get a wrong perception. We got a wrong idea. So whatever we see have the potential to make us happy because it exists. it is there, it is permanent, and it is my under my control. I can own it, I can possess it, I can enjoy it. So therefore we have a kind of a perversion, and now we acquire it, now we start to think about it. Now simply at the beginning we have the perception, we have the wrong perception, but now once we promote that, now we start to think again and again, we think of the same manner. Now we are having perversion at the thinking level, at the thought level. Now we don't stop there either, so we further think again and again, think, and now it becomes fairly engraved in our mind. Now it becomes a hard in our mind. Now it is very much like our brain washed, and we are fairly thinking in a particular manner. Now another person can't make us think in a different manner. Our mind is fairly restricted or confined to a particular way of thinking. So the perversions are happening, starting from various signs, and then going to the thought level, then going to the actually the obsession level, and then going to the sort of engraving kind of level, and now deeply rooted. And this is, and our mind is fairly conditioned to think in that way. So it may be even an extremist kind of view, completely wrong view. So that is how these perversions happen in the mind. So all actually start from signs. So therefore you can understand these signs have a major role in our mind. So if we are not properly recognizing these signs, so they actually completely do a kind of a encoding in our mind. They actually make fair difference, a huge difference in our mind. They color the mind. And they start even to generate a lot of formations in our mind. And they appear like correct. They appear like true. Say when kind of a proliferation going on, obsession going on, it is true for us. And we think it is, we believe it. We consider it as something true, something available. So Buddha says, all these signs are like a mirage. You know, during the hot season, if you are able to travel in a desert or maybe even a road which is fairly heated, so at far you can recognize the kind of shimmering in the far distant. So that is the mirage. So we know because we have seen it or we have learned about it, we have heard from someone, so this kind of an incident phenomena is possible, and therefore we recognize it as a mirage. But if we consider maybe a deer or maybe a dog or cow, so if it looks at the mirage, probably he may not in a position to recognize it as a mirage. Instead of, it may consider it as water because he doesn't have the understanding to recognize it as a mirage. So Buddha mentioned the whole signs, all perceptions, all the marks stored in our mind, and then and using which we generate a huge proliferation, huge lot of signs. So all these perceptions are mirage. They appear like true, they appear like existing, but they are not. They are simply images. They are not real. Suppose you do Anapanasati meditation. Suppose you are continuing your practice and you do mindful breathing, and your in-breath and out-breath are now disappearing. Now it is calming down. It becomes subtler and subtler. So now your mind further calms down. Now you can't even distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath. So what happens now? Now you have a very limited object to keep your attention, and it's almost disappeared. Now you can't distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath, but something is there, some sensation is there, but very difficult to recognize. But at this moment, there's a possibility, may be a kind of a sign appear in your mind. Now your eyes are closed, but there is a possibility that a beautiful sign may appear in your mind. Say if you are a very faithful character, there may be a beautiful Buddha image appear in the mind. Maybe a huge pagoda appear in the mind. Maybe a Bodhi tree appear in the mind. So these are very faithful figures like the marks could appear in the mind. So immediately we pay attention to that and we have a lot of faith on that. We believe it as a true thing and we give value to it. We give a lot of importance to it. And as a result, it is growing. It appears like a very small sign at the beginning, but since we are promoting it, we are appreciating it, we are giving a lot of value to it, now it is sort of blooming. Now it appears like very vivid, almost like you are seeing from your eyes. Though your eyes are closed, you can vividly see the Buddha image, say a pagoda, maybe a Bodhi tree, whatever it is. To some other person, say their eyes are closed, but maybe kind of a skeleton or maybe a passed away relative. So all these maybe appear like very true. So, and we have given a lot of emphasis to it. And now the mind, more precisely the consciousness, have a very good place to establish. Now we are actually being caught up. And previously, actually, we were going in a very direct path. We are basically refining our attention, refining mindfulness, and we are almost weakened the consciousness. But now it is again strengthened because we were deluded to this mirage. We were deluded to these signs. We were deluded to these various marks. We were deluded to this beautiful Buddha image, to pagoda, a Bodhi tree, to the skeleton, to the past relative, and we feel that they are real, we consider them as real, so we were deluded. So these are all signs. So these are actually pitfalls that we may come across in our meditative life. And it is very difficult to convince sometimes people because they give a lot of value to what they see. Even when their eyes are closed, they vividly see. So they give a lot of value to that. And for them, it appears very real. So that's why if someone is telling that these are merely perceptions, these are merely signs, ignore them. You come back to your body. So they don't consider that as a valid answer or valid advice because they can see it. But here we need to recognize that Buddha mentioned all these perceptions, all these signs are a mirage. They appear like true, appear like existing, but really they are not. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so if one properly understand the empty nature of a mirage, the deluded nature of the mirage, so they will understand there is nothing substantial there. So they will understand, sir, it's an empty mirage, it's a kind of illusion. It is empty. It is insubstantial. Similarly, Buddha mentioned, if a wise person understand all these signs, so it's a kind of a mental image. So once we are sort of strengthening them, once we are promoting them, once we are adding labels, once we are trying to personify it, appreciating it, strengthen it, then it is growing. Then it appears like real. But actually they are a mirage. So that the wise person may understand. So wise person then will understand, okay, it is sort of a mind-made thing. It's a deluded thing. It's a sort of a colored thing. It's a fabrication. So therefore it is empty. There is nothing substantial there. There is no essence there. For him it appears like empty. For that wise person, all the perceptions, all the signs, mental images, they are merely mirage. So this is the teaching that Buddha very categorically mentioned here. So this is a very important area that we are covering, because these are very carefully we have to recognize during our meditative life. So with that, actually, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
I'm sorry, Bhante, there are currently 4 questions. Question number 1, this is a general question. Actually, this is from last week. I'm not sure if it actually got read out, but anyway. Dear Bhante, yesterday you made some practical comments about how to handle Shasanika Mihira if it comes towards you due to some cause and effect. Just do it and move on. This question is, once you make the call, execution of this activity. Over the years, associating with organizing various Dhamma events and Satipatthana activities, we find that just adhering to Sati principle only is not good enough for executing and achieving objectives. If we don't apply worldly skills from this side of the fence, i.e. go with rigor and vigor, we find that the Dhamma initiatives are stagnating and not going forward, or very poor organization or quality driving people away from Dhamma than getting them closer. However, when we try to apply worldly skills gained from our education, workplace, etc., they seem to be contradicting with current sati principle of doing what you have to do without expecting anything. It is what it is. If you don't set goals with vigor and rigor and drive towards it, nothing can be achieved in this mundane, commercially driven, sophisticated world. This might be one reason why these valuable Dhamma initiatives don't go beyond certain level pockets, even though the great teachers want to spread them as much as possible. Are we mixing up things here? Appreciate Bhante's view on this with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, anyway, I think, Chatu, we discussed this question last time also. So we need to have some sort of a measure, some sort of balance. So where to drop and where to take. So when certain tasks are being assigned to us, so is it worthy of doing it or worthy of dropping it? So this is something that we need to decide. So in order to get that decision, mindfulness actually helps. So your clarity of mind really helps. So if you have wrong perceptions, preconceived ideas, and you give wrong emphasis, wrong value judgments, then you can take a wrong decision. But on the other hand, if you have a clear mind, if you can recognize various aspects in the given opportunity, then you can see whether you can consider whether it is worthy of implementing it or not worthy of implementing it. So you have a better chance of getting a correct decision. So I feel it is depending on the situation, depending on various scenarios, we need to say you can't have a general rule. So case by case, you need to recognize what are the possibilities, what are the available opportunities, what are the pros and cons. And as a result, we need to take a correct decision. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 4. This is walking mindfulness. Dear Bhante, when I do walking practice, I can observe various sensations on the sole of my foot and also the differences between left and right sensations. After continuous application of mindfulness to the process, I observe drastic changes in these observations, where blurring or bleaching of the sensations and building up a relaxed state. This happens both in walking and sitting. I feel like a third person watching the process, and this makes me think that that is part of my mind watching another part of my mind. It seems like the thoughts generated due to touch and other sensations are being watched by another kind of thoughts. They may both be changing, but is it a correct analogy? What is the final outcome of this practice, Bhante? Is it that we gradually understand different facets of our mind and how it works by this process of mind watching another part of mind, and finally catching the state which is not made out of mind. With metta, that's the end.
So actually, we are going through various stages of our practice. So at the beginning, we simply establish mindfulness using various mechanisms like left, right, lifting, moving, placing, etc. So those are real different techniques. And once we are able to establish mindfulness, now we drop all these various techniques and we try to accommodate a very, silent mind, very attentive mind. And with that, we continue our practice. Now there you can recognize various element characteristics, hardness, stiffness, smoothness, roughness, heaviness, lightness, hot, cold, etc. So you are now recognizing various element characteristics. So this is another stage in your practice. So as much as possible, you are now trying to recognize all these different characteristics. Actually, we step onto the process using maybe a very apparent or very easy kind of a characteristic. But later, we are refining our mindfulness, clear comprehension, to recognize various other refined characteristics or subtle characteristics. So that is how we are further improving ourselves. And that is another stage. And as we are moving further, so all these appear like blurred, as you have mentioned in your report. So now they start to disappear. So logically, we might think, okay, I was improving in mindfulness, so many different characteristics are now going to appear vividly more and more. So that should be increased more and more as I practice. But at a given moment, it can change. It may turn to the other side. Now everything appears like blurred. Now you can't distinguish. So everybody, every phenomena shows some same behavior. And they appear like distant. They are like not yours. And you like observing like a third person. Body is simply moving to and fro, and like a robot, and you like an outsider simply watching. All these different characteristics, and they are changing, and they like now like a flux. And by the way you are able to observe, kind of a distant observation, unattached or detached observation. So this is another phase, another stage that you are experiencing in our walking meditation. Actually, this is also not the end. So this actually helps the mind to have a different perspective about our experience. So typically our minds are grasping all the experiences and we identify with them and we consider that I am experiencing, I am going through happiness, I am going through suffering, etc. But now there is no I making and it may be fairly weakened. And we recognize there are certain experiences are there. And all different characteristics of elements. And these elements have their own agenda. They have their own behavior. We have no control. And they come and go. They have the nature to come and go. And we can't expect their behavior. We can't wish their behavior in a certain pattern. Rather, they change. Constantly they change. So now, as we experience this, so our perception in the mind is going to change. And we were thinking that it is me, it is my body, and this experience is very pleasurable. I can actually control it. I can have a lot of satisfaction, a lot of happiness through it. So this is how we started. But as we continue the practice, so these wrong perceptions or maybe perversions now going to change. So this is the important part. So this is how the insights going to happen. And that is how our wisdom is growing. So the focus of the Vipassana meditation is to sort of arouse different insights. So which actually have the capacity to remove the delusion, to remove the ignorance. because of the wisdom. So these insights are very powerful. And as we gain more and more insights and the insights are strengthened, the delusion, ignorance, maybe start to disappear. And we start to think in a different manner. And our behavior also going to change. And we actually change now. So things are happening, but now we are in a, we have changed our attitude to an entirely different way. So our perspective has entirely changed. So therefore, the practice actually evolves. So you can't expect the same kind of practice for many years. Rather, in case if you do very seldom practice, it may be possible. But if you are continuously practice, then the very many phases of your practice are available. So we simply have to continue the practice. Actually, we can't jump to the other part, even though we know it theoretically, this is what's going to happen. You can't jump like that. Rather, you need to practically engage in the practice. As a result, it may naturally move to the other part, move to the other step. So it's a kind of a natural evolvement. So this is how it is happening.
Question number 3 of 4. This is a general question. Dear Swabinwansa, I participated in the residential 4 days retreat last week and realized that 4 to 5 days seemed just enough to get the body accustomed to back-to-back sitting and walking practice. The first day seems very successful, and the second and third days are more or less battling with the pains and posture issues. After the fourth day, the body seems settled down to the routine a bit, and the practice, especially the sitting, and the practice gets support from the body. Seems it takes at least 5 to 6 days in my case to fully accustomize to this full day timetable. I've heard Swaminarayan saying that once the body gets comfort and relaxed, that the other faculties such as Preeti, Pasadi arise. Is this related to what I observe above when we try to practice full time? With metta, that's the end.
Yeah, it is true. Actually, at the beginning, we are not getting much support from the body. Instead, it's constantly giving us trouble. A lot of pains and discomfort is available. But as you are continuing your practice, so our body gets seasoned. So you don't need to discourage yourself, because it may take time anyway. And with time, your body start to adjust and it get used to this posture. And then it becomes less painful and you can maintain the same posture for a long time. And it actually gives a lot of chance to do continuous observation, continuous engagement in the practice. But anyway, at the beginning, there are a lot of problems, a lot of issues. But with time, they start to disappear. And you got to find out various temporary solutions at the beginning. But of course, they are not giving permanent solution. So whatever the solution you give today might not work on tomorrow, might not work on day after tomorrow. You may have to give a different solution. So likewise, we are simply handling the situation in the beginning. But later, slowly, our various faculties start to grow. Mindfulness start to grow, concentration start to grow, wisdom also start to grow, and we have a lot of effort, we are continuously practicing. As a result, the body start to adjust, body start to use to the posture. So that is the place, that is the time that we are getting enough support from the posture, sorry, from the body, then actually mind also becomes comfortable. Body also becomes comfortable. And as a result, mind actually concentrates. So it's a kind of a positive energizing where the body feels comfortable, the mind also feels comfortable. Because of this comfortable nature, the mind gets concentrated. Samadhi also going to generate. Sukhino chittan samadhyati. So actually we need to have the support from the body. We need to have the support from the mind as a relaxed, comfortable, feeling at ease kind of an atmosphere, then only the mind going to generate fair amount of samadhi, concentration. So it's a kind of a generating of all these prerequisites So it will actually take time. So we need to have a lot of patience in our practice. So even though I am telling this, so don't expect them to happen within a couple of weeks. It may take months or even years to have all these things line up in a favorable manner. Yeah.
Question number four, this is the last one. General question. Bhante, regarding different perceptions appearing in the mind, as mentioned in the Dhamma talk, if they are not Buddha images, pagodas, passed away relatives, and dramatic things, can they appear as normal thoughts? Normal, less dramatic matters related or not related to our day-to-day living? If so, can we separate these perceptions in deep meditation from random thoughts? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, thoughts are also there, but at this moment, the perception may be prominent. The various signs, mental images may be prominent, and we are the ones adding thoughts. Actually, the image may appear, but since it has generated some amount of pleasant feeling, suppose there's a Buddha image appear, and we have a lot of faith on the Buddha, and as a result, we start to think about the Buddha. Now, you were doing Anapanasati, now you have seen the Buddha image, now you start to think about the Buddha, and you are promoting this Buddha image, and you sort of start to think various characteristics of the Buddha. Now you are started to think, basically. Now thinking. Again and again, now you are thinking. So vitakka is generated now. So thoughts are generated. So actually what we have done is entirely giving wrong value to a perception, a wrong value to a sign. There we need not consider this as a real Buddha image, rather it's a mirage. So that is where we need to give prominence to Dhamma, the advice of the Buddha. So Buddha has advised here, so there is a possibility as your mindfulness refine, as your, say, Mula Kamathana, primary object refines, there's a higher chance that the mind-made images probably might appear. It's a kind of a warning that Buddha gives. So at that time, Buddha advised us not to get deluded by them. So they are merely mirage. Your eyes are closed. When your eyes are closed, whatever you see, they are merely mirage. They are merely signs. So this is the Buddha's advice. So there we actually have to give prominence, value to the Buddha's advice, to the Buddha's teaching, to the Dhamma. As a result, if we are wise at that moment, then we are not promoting the image. We are not considering it as a real Buddha image. We are not giving any prominence to that, any value to that. Instead we recognize it's as a mirage. It's a kind of a bait of the Mara. So Mara has put a bait. So I should not eat it. So that is how we need to understand it. And as a result, we have to ignore it, and we may have to pay attention back to the body. So here, actually, paying attention back to the body is the most safest method, because body is actually rough. Body is fairly, say, available to feel. You can touch, you can feel it. And this is here, actually, the body is the best option to pay attention. So as you are able to pay attention to the body, maybe to the body posture, maybe rising and falling, maybe various discomfort, minor feelings, painful feelings, whatever it is. So there you are deviating your attention back to the body, and it helps to weaken that perception, weaken that mental image, because we are the ones strengthening it. Now we stop strengthening that. Instead, we have deviated our attention back to the body. As a result, that image start to disappear. So this is how actually we got to face this situation. Yeah.
There's actually two more questions that have come in, Bhante. Question number 5 of 6, general question. Bhante, regarding the mind and body getting comfortable over a period of time, is it a must to get support from the body to continue a successful practice? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, if we get that support, that is more useful, because if your body does not give enough support, then actually it's very difficult for you to progress. And as your mind actually builds up concentration, even the discomfort of the body may start to disappear because the mind is strengthening. So actually what I have said is fairly valid for a beginner to his early practice. But as he gain concentration, as he gain enough mindfulness, so that actually leads to have a comfortable body. It actually leads to have a lighter kind of a feeling. So your body feels lighter. Your mind feels lighter, like floating. So at that time, actually, even though there may be pain available in the body, it has subsided because of the collectedness of the mind, because of the concentration of the mind. So this bodily comfort being subsided. So therefore, on such situation, actually, the mind concentration, the mind collectedness is far superior to the bodily discomfort. So therefore, there are situations that the bodily discomfort we can ignore and we can continue, and ultimately it may not give any problem because the generated strength or mental strength or the concentration is more powerful. But on the other hand, for a beginner, it's a trouble. Yeah.
Question number 6. This is a general question on sati and removing kilesa. Dear Venerable Bhante, walking and sitting meditation is practice as time permits, but on week, I think what they mean was they practice walking and sitting during the week that they accommodate somehow. But throughout the day, with my daily activities, I'm mindful or watchful of my mind. I acknowledge both bad and good thoughts, and where bad thoughts arise, and sometimes I continue to think on the kilesa thoughts, and sometimes, but soon I pull my mind from, but soon I pull my mind from them to neutral thoughts. As a result of the above, I experienced twice where my kilesa on anger and rage increased suddenly to about 100 or 150%, and I was driven towards this kilesa. And as I pulled this out, I was able to see that my kilesa on anger and raga reduced to a very sub level or very low level. Feel that I have removed kilesa about a majority. Am I right, or is this Mara tricking me? I appreciate your advice. Much merits. Sorry, did that make sense, Bhante? Sorry, Bhante, you're on mute.
Yeah. I got the point anyway.
Okay.
So actually, once you start to pay attention to the mind, so you, of course, may find a lot of kilesa, a lot of defilements, but that is the nature. I mean, we have a lot of these things. Actually, honest understanding of these defilements is quite important. So we don't need to think that we are like saints, that we don't have defilements. Rather, if we honestly recognize there are many defilements available, and I have to work out on them. So that's a very humble recognition. It's a very realistic recognition, and that is actually helpful. So without understanding like that, so we can't correct ourselves. And from the beginning, if we think that I am a sage, I am a saint, I have no defilements, so that is actually a kind of an overestimation. But on the other hand, if we can recognize various defilements available in the mind, so that actually gives us a better opportunity to work out on them. So let them arouse. And once I am having developed mindfulness, developed concentration, and as I am developing wisdom, I have a better chance to face with these defilements. And that is why the whole practice, that is where the whole practice is directed. Actually, all these strengths, all these awakening factors we are making or we are strengthening in order to face all these many different defilements and ultimately to eliminate them, or we can say allowing them to come, allowing them to be, and and not participating in them, and as a result we are allowing them to go, and we are weakening the process, we are weakening various habitual tendencies. So this is how we need to properly, gradually handle these things. So don't worry. Even though I am advising you, I also have a lot of defilements, and I got to recognize them, and we need to honestly practice. So this practice is the most important thing. So ultimately, one day we may be able to feel the weakening of various defilements. Yeah.
That ends the questions for today, Bhante. Just to finish up the session, I'd like to thank Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program, especially for last week for our retreat, and also pass on our merits. And also like to thank the people helping behind the scenes, organizers and people seen and unseen. And lastly, to all the participants, because without you, there'd be no program. So with that, I'd like to end the session. Theron Sarnai.